All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Wednesday, December 12, 2018 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, could you please call the roll?
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Wheeler?
Here.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. Presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so that everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in Council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony and resolutions or first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. Presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in a person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. First item is item number 1293.
Authorize the second amended and restated visitor facilities intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County and Metro.
Colleagues, this item has to do with how we structure and spend resources from the visitor facilities intergovernmental agreement. We do not plan to vote on this item today, and what we'll be doing is we'll have our presentation, discussion, and then we'll move it on to a second reading next week. I'm very happy to say that we've reached a tentative agreement with the other jurisdictions. That's Metro and Multnomah County. In fact, we agreed on the dollar amount some time ago, and all that is left at this point is really the drafting of some of the finer points around the legal aspects of the document. I had a conversation with Chair Kafouri this morning, and she agreed that we had reached an agreement on this, and she encouraged us to go ahead and have this afternoon session. And as I said, we'll withhold the vote until next week so that if there are any other amendments or changes that need to be made next week, we could go ahead and certainly do that. I want to particularly thank the staff at the city and in my office, Susan Gibson Hartnett and Michelle Planbeck, both of whom have spent the better part of the last year working towards an agreement under what I would describe as very challenging circumstances. Susan, it's my understanding that you spent most of the last several months working on this basically full time. And I want to acknowledge that and thank you for your hard work on this. Over the last three decades, the city, the county, and Metro, in partnership with the tourism industry, have worked together to maximize the economic benefit from tourism and conventions in our community. One of the key tools we have is what's known as the Visitors Facilities Intergovernmental Agreement, or VFIGA. The VFIGA provides for the planning, development, promotion, operation, and management of the region's convention, exposition trade, spectator, performing arts, and visitors facilities, and supports broader community vitality through jobs and local spending. In May of this year, the city, the county, and Metro signed a letter of agreement which focused on four key areas. First of all, resilient reserves to protect the VFTA during periods of stress and allow for strategic use of excess funds that accumulate during periods of higher growth. Number two, adequate visitor development fund, so that this fund can keep pace with the industry growth rate. Number three, maintaining healthy facilities to enhance the existing facilities like Veterans Memorial Coliseum, keeping them vital and competitive. And number four, community livability and safety, to improve conditions for the community and people experiencing homelessness, improve the visitor experience, and help Portland remain a desirable destination. The agreement we're hearing today, while not perfect in every respect, meets and balances those goals very, very well. I want to focus a bit more about how this agreement helps us address homelessness in particular. Portland is an attractive destination. Those of us who live here love it. People looking for a new place to live are coming here in large numbers. And more visitors than ever are choosing to spend their vacations here, and more conventions are choosing to locate in Portland. That shouldn't be a surprise. We have a lot to offer as a community: food, arts and culture, access to transit and nature, and so much more. But there is another side to that coin. At the same time that we're attracting visitors by the hundreds of thousands, too many are suffering on our streets without a home, many of them experiencing addiction or mental health or economic challenges. The best solution for homelessness is housing, and the best solution for those who are chronically homeless is to pair that housing with support services. That could include mental health services or addiction services or domestic violence support services or many other kinds of specific services to help people be successful in their housing. That's why the city and the county have set an aggressive goal of creating 2,000 supportive housing units over the next 10 years. I'm happy to say that the city is already making good progress on supportive housing. In the last year alone, we've either opened or put in the pipeline over 500 units of supportive housing. And with the recent passage of the Metro bond, we have a substantial amount of what we need to develop the next 500 units. As mayor, I've worked with all of you, all of my colleagues here on the Portland City Council, to champion more supportive housing units through the implementation of the Portland Housing Bond, active political and financial support of the Metro bond, and the innovative work being done by the Portland Housing Bureau. We're building housing, which is the city's traditional focus. But supportive housing includes services, traditionally the focus of the county. This division of responsibility can lead to important partnerships and good results. Recently, the city partnered with the Joint Office of Homeless Services in Multnomah County on a supportive housing pilot to better connect housing and services. The deal on the Visitors Fund we're hearing today is another good partnership. Local governments and the tourism industry will devote nearly $60 million from the Visitors Facilities Trust account to the Joint Office on Homeless Services over the next decade. But that level of funding for support services is still not enough to meet our goal of 2,000 supportive units over the next decade. We heard a report in the fall that suggested services could be as high as $40 million each year. I obviously support discussing the concept of a services levy or other possible ways to fill that gap. Just like the Metro Housing Bond, which also included capital funding, and the Constitutional Amendment Ballot Measure 102, supported by the voters in November to stretch our capital dollars further, I realize that in order to make a real difference on our streets and in our communities, we're going to need to continue to work with, in partnership, and support our partners. I know that the county is looking at this question, and they are seriously evaluating different proposals, and I know that if the county decides to spearhead a ballot measure for supportive housing services or other strategies, I know that all of us would welcome that discussion. I know that I most certainly will. So on to the presentation, but before we do that, we have substitute exhibits A and B. Is that correct?
Yes,
can
correct.
We move those as a package?
I move substitute A and B as a package.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fish. We have a second from Commissioner Fritz. Let's go ahead and vote on the substitute. Call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye.
Substitute exhibits are now on the tape. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. My name is Tom Reinhart. I'm proud to be the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Portland. My team and I are very pleased to be here today. When we proposed to the mayor that we begin this effort several months ago, maybe more than several months ago, we had high hopes that we could arrive at an agreement which benefits not only Portlanders, but the entire region as well. I am proud to tell you today that the agreement before you fulfills those initial hopes. It's a privilege to sit here and represent a group of people who have collectively shouldered this work together. Government Relations Director Elizabeth Edwards, City Economist Josh Harwood, CFO Jennifer Cooperman, and Ken McGare from the City's Attorney's Office have all been instrumental. Thanks as well to the many City Hall staff who played a key role, particularly our Chiefs of Staff of all the elected officials. I also want to recognize Jeff Miller with Travel Portland for the time and effort he and Brian Doran have invested in this work, and our colleagues at Metro and Multnomah County. Finally, as the mayor said, we would not be here today without the truly amazing creativity, effort, and persistence of Susan Hartnett. She has been the key leader in this entire initiative, and I want to thank her on behalf of generations of Portlanders who will benefit in many ways from this agreement over many years to come. Thank you, Susan. The mayor covered a good deal of the history of the Visitors Fund and the VDF, so I'm not going to delve into that now. We'll take any questions that, of course, any council members have after the short presentation. Susan will go through the details of the changes that we're proposing in a minute, but before that, I want to address you in my role as CIO on two key points in this amended agreement. First, part of my role in a process like this one is to regularly ask my team, what are the risks, and have we appropriately protected the city against potential negative outcomes? I am comfortable that the city's risk is appropriately protected in this new agreement, provided we keep in mind the initial premise that the system needs to be fed by visitors coming to Portland and paying these taxes. My team at the Office of Management Finance, through both the Spectator Venues Program and the CFO, will be vigilant to assure the city's risk is kept within acceptable levels, and we make that commitment to you as our council. Second, council has taken bold steps over the recent years to address long-standing deferred maintenance needs in our transportation, parks, and civic infrastructure. You have also made it clear you want us to continue coming up with creative solutions to make progress in this area. This agreement with our regional partners takes another long-needed step to upgrade and maintain our assets. In this case, Veterans Memorial Coliseum and Portland 5 Center for the Arts buildings, without additional taxes on Portlanders. And we want you to know we are continuing to work on efforts like this one. With that, I turn it over to Susan to explain the important changes in the amended agreement.
Susan. Thank you, Tom. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Susan Hartnett. I am the Spectator Venues Program Manager. The agreement in front of you today is really the result of more than 2 years worth of work. It began as an effort to develop the strategic plan that is called for in the existing agreement, which would guide future amendments to the agreement. However, late last year, with our understanding about the growing urgency for the various needs, as well as the opportunity to make some immediate progress in addressing those needs, the conversation shifted from the strategic plan to an actual amendment to the IGA. As the mayor mentioned, in May, the mayor, the chair, and the Metro president, Tom Hughes, signed a letter of agreement, which provided specific direction on these amendments, and asked that we provide them by October 31st. We were a little late on that, but not too much. The letter of agreement focused on the four priorities that the mayor mentioned, and those have consistently framed the discussion. I'm going to use those as a framework for talking about the specific details. So first of all, consistent with the community livability and safety priority, there are two allocations in this agreement that are dedicated to new funding for the provision of services and programs for people experiencing homelessness or who are at risk of becoming homeless, and to address community livability and safety concerns associated with homelessness. The first of those allocations renames an existing county allocation, which is called County Visitor Facilities and Operations Support. It is now called Livability and Safety Supportive Services. This is known as the base amount. That amount will begin this fiscal year at the amount of $1,775,000, and that amount is escalated annually. In 2022-23, fiscal year 22-23, an additional $250,000 will be added to that base allocation. So in 22-23, the base allocation will have grown to about $2.2 million. Now, to get to the goal number that the mayor has repeated to us for the total amount going to homelessness, we added a second allocation, which is called the additional livability and support amount. And it is a it is done as a difference between a set number and the base allocation. So beginning next year, the first additional allocation will be the difference between the base allocation and $2.5 million, which is about $680,000. That will be added to the base amount next year. The following year, it will be the difference between $3.25 million and the base amount. In 2021-22, it will be the difference between $3.775 million and the base amount. That will be about $1.9 million by then. In 22-23 and thereafter, the additional allocation will be the difference between the base amount and $5.25 million. And that is where it caps out, and that amount escalates using CPI on an ongoing basis. That's projected at an average of $3.8 million per year in addition to the $2.5 million a year for the base allocation over the period until fiscal 29-30. For the base allocation, the total over that period of time is $26.7 million, and for the additional amount, it's $30.5 million for that total of $57.2 million over that period of time.
Over what period of time?
From this year until fiscal 29-30. I think it's 8 years. So just as a way of getting a perspective on this, this is the single largest program and operation allocation within the amended agreement, both on an individual yearly basis as well as over that period of time. Now, the bonds are more than that, but these are the allocations that are given to the various facilities and for various promotional purposes and programs that support tourism. So this is the single largest allocation that will go. So other healthy facilities priorities that were talked about, there are two new bond support provisions within the bond within the agreement, and this is probably the most important thing for the city. One is for a renovation project at the Veterans Memorial Coliseum, and the other for a renovation project at the Portland Five Centers for the Arts. The bond support is set at $40 million in net proceeds, but that dollar amount is set to escalate beginning this year. And using construction cost escalation rather than CPI, which, as most of you know, tends to be much higher than CPI. I think it was 6.5% this year. So we're trying to make sure that by the time we actually get around to these projects, $40 million is worth the same amount of money, $40 million or whatever the new number is. There are some limits on these bond support allocations. The VMC allocation cannot begin before January 1st, 2021, and we must establish the parameters of the project by the end of 2027. But once those parameters are set, there's no limit on when the bonds can be issued. So that gives us a window of opportunity to work with our partners at the Rose Quarter, figure out what the right thing to do at the VMC is, put together a funding package, and begin that project. For the Portland Five, the dates are no sooner than January 1st, 2024, and project parameters need to be established by December 31st, 2030, with the same open-ended time frame for when the actual bonds are issued.
Why is that so long? Get started.
Couple of reasons. One is it's what the fund can afford. We are, as I've said to Tom several times, and this is when he asked me what are the risks and are we adequately protected, we are loading this system up more than we ever have before. So we've tried to be careful about not overloading it. So the other reason I would say is that I don't think we're as ready with Portland 5 as we are with VMC to actually begin talking about the specifics of a project and what that would look like. And I think you're probably all aware that $40 million is not enough to address the full set of needs at either of those locations. But what we think we have in this is a commitment to funds that allow us to bring a conversation to the community to look for additional sources of funding, including potentially private contributions for both of those, which will eventually allow us to get to the dollar amounts that we actually need for these venues. And as you know, at the Rose Quarter, being able to have that conversation with our partners there is very vital, and the timing is pretty critical. So I'm not going to go into the details of the other facility changes other than to say there were modest increases to many of the facility operation allocations and future increases to some of those in future years, Portland 5 being one of those. There's a new allocation, a modest allocation for the Portland Expo Center, which I think is very important as the Oregon Convention Center gets more booked up with larger events. At the local level, we're going to be looking for other places to hold events, and the Expo Center is going to become important for that. Very importantly, also for the city and Metro, is a one-time allocation of $2 million that would be in this year's allocations, and that would be to allow the acoustical shell replacement project to go forward at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, and in doing that, we will be leveraging $3 million in private funding. Consistent with the adequate visitor development fund priority, the two existing visitor development fund allocations are merged into a single allocation, really for ease of management. There's no point in keeping them separate at this point. And the total amount is increased next year to $2.5 million. As most of you are aware, the VDF grants funds to meeting and convention planners that are oftentimes those grants are oftentimes key in helping us land those events. These grants have historically yielded around 27-1 in a return on investment, including a commitment to occupy hotel rooms, which in turn produces more taxes. And I would remind everybody that transient lodging taxes includes a 5% amount that goes directly to the city's general fund, which was about $37 million in last year's general fund. The total estimated VDF allocation will grow to about $32.8 million in that same period between now and fiscal 29-30. And if you use that historic ROI rate of 27-1, that could yield close to $1 billion in economic activity in the region. Consistent with the resilient reserves priority and the letter of agreement, we are maintaining the restricted reserve to assure that there's the ability to fund the programs and operational allocations, in other words, everything except the bonds, in times of economic downturn. And everything is sized to make sure that there's always money for the bonds, but sometimes if there's not enough money, it's those operational allocations that can get whacked, if you will. If you'll recall, in 2009, Portland 5 got none of their money. It was around $500,000, $600,000, which was pretty significant for them. A new strategic reserve of $2 million is funded from the existing reserves, and it will be used for special events or unique investment opportunities that yield an economic benefit to the community. The one event that gets talked about the most often would be the NBA All-Star Game, but there's other large-scale opportunities where the local hosting city would be required to make a financial contribution to land the event, and this fund will allow us to do that for the first time. In addition to the allocation changes that I just went through, there are a number of changes being made to the fund oversight. This is the answer to Tom about, are we adequately protecting the city's interest? The amendments establish new triggers and a new process that requires the existing financial review team, which is made up of the four chief financial officers. So the city, county, metro, and Travel Portland CFOs make this committee up. They provide recommendations on an ongoing and regular basis on the adequacy of the fund to meet all of its obligations. And in a situation where they determine that there may be an economic circumstance that will not allow that to happen, they make recommendations to the Visitor Development Fund Board, which is a board made up of public and private participants. And they will make recommendations or decisions on ways to adjust allocations to make sure that the shortfalls are addressed. That decision by the VDF board will be reviewed a second time by the financial review team, and if they concur with a VDF board decision, that decision is final. If they don't, the decision will automatically be referred to dispute resolution, and the dispute resolution committee is made up of the mayor, the chair, and the metro president. So the direct elected officials will be responsible for considering those changes if the VDF board and FRT can't work it out.
And that decision is made by simple majority, right?
That's correct.
Correct.
A few things about this new system of checks and balances. There are now mandatory periodic reviews by the financial review team twice a year, prospectively and retrospectively. There is flexibility being built into the system that allows any of the allocations that go to programs or operations to be adjusted in managing the impacts of an economic downturn. Right now, the way the system works, it simply goes from the bottom. The bottom bucket doesn't get filled if there's not enough. The one above it does. This allows us to think about different ways to spread the impacts of an economic downturn. There is also a built-in fail-safe measure, which will require changes to the allocations, rolling them back to the year one amounts if the VDF board and/or dispute resolution committee cannot come to a solution that addresses the shortfall. This is the way that we make sure that the city and metro are protected in our bond payments being made. That's about all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Commissioner Fish.
Thank you very much. I have a bunch of questions. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Director Hartnett, you said that the $57 million for the services side of supportive housing could be over an 8-year period. My understanding was a 10-year period. Are we just tripping over the math?
I'd have to count the number of fiscal years between now and 2029.
But somewhere between 8 and 10 years.
Yeah.
But it could be 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay. I have the same problem with fiscal years and doing the math. But I don't know whether the following question is directed to you or to Mark Jolin or to someone else, but is the agreement clear that the that this is a net increase in funding to the joint office and therefore is additive and not a backfill?
Yes, those words are used, new and additive, and it specifically speaks about the funds going to the joint office or any successor agency. So over time, if we come up with a different system of addressing homelessness, this allocation would go to a successor.
Thank you. Obviously, my own preference is that the bulk of the dollars go to fund the services on supportive housing, but that is ultimately a decision to be made by the joint office and other governing bodies. There has been some talk of using a portion of the money to buy down some of the units of the Metro Housing Bond. So ultimately, that's a decision to be made by the joint office?
That's correct.
Exclusively?
That's correct.
Okay.
There is a new reporting requirement in the agreement. So one of the things that we don't really know right now is how funds are being used sometimes. So we've added a reporting requirement, and we will be asking the joint office along with everybody else to share information on how they're expending these funds and how they're actually meeting the goals stated in the agreement.
Let's take a moment just to focus on the three programs that are going to potentially get resources. So starting with the Keller, you said that there's a $2 million plus dollar set aside.
That goes to Arlene Schnitzer.
Sorry. And that will then leverage some private fundraising and will get us now a state-of-the-art sound system. Is
that's
that correct?
That's correct.
I know that's been talked about over the past year, so we're going to move on that one.
That's correct.
Okay. And obviously, the Keller has some resilience issues, and who knows what if you add up those dollars. What's the minimum you need that you estimate you need to keep VMC in basic functioning condition, recognizing that the future of VMC may not actually be decided until many years out, and even you know potentially after we embrace the Albina vision or any number of other plans for the area. So what do you consider to be the minimum you need to maintain it as an operational facility?
So you might recall in 2015 we did the BMC options study, and in that we looked at three different versions, and the essential repair and replacement version of that, those three scenarios, was around $40 million. Unfortunately, $40 million is really not going to take care of many of the things that are needed in that venue. The number I'm using right now, which was based on that 2015 study, is around $70 to $80 million, which is kind of in the middle of the range of the three options that we looked at. The high end was at like $97 million.
Those are the investments in things like HVAC, structural integrity,
ADA, new seats.
ADA.
Yeah.
So it doesn't in any way preclude an adaptive reuse of the facility if someone comes up with a better long-term idea that creates a sustainable revenue source.
I would start perhaps by saying that I think the VMC is showing itself to actually be quite sustainable from an operational standpoint. The venue has been net profitable for the last 4 years, with the total net operating profit for last fiscal year being close to $1.4 million. And that is in part because Rip City Management has been very creative in finding new uses for the venue, and things like the Phil Knight Invitational made a huge difference last year. The year before that, the net operating profit at the venue was around $800,000.
I appreciate that. I'm also thinking back over the last 10 years, we've had a number of big visioning projects about what's the future of the VMC.
That's correct.
We've had people talking about it
community
sports
centers.
Venue.
Yep.
That was Doug Oblitz's vision. We've had arts. We've had healthcare. We've had
big box retail.
On it.
Roller coaster.
Just the point I want to make is that in allocating the resources to maintain the building as a city asset, we are not precluding a opportunity that could come down in the next 5 to 10 years where someone says, I've got a big vision and I'm willing to pay for it.
That's correct.
Okay,
that's correct.
Commissioner Fish, I do think it's important to add, when you talk about the timeline, we do believe that this commitment that the jurisdictions are making together does change our ability to have discussions exactly as you are identifying with key partners who have already offered in the right context to bring money to the table. So what I think you alluded to, this could be several years down the road. We will start very soon with this commitment at looking at options.
Well, it also sounds to me from the way you've positioned it that this is going to help us in our negotiations with Rip City as they consider whatever their options are when the lease comes up.
I believe that's correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. I'd like to, at this moment, invite Jeff Miller. He's the president and CEO of Travel Portland. He's an important partner in all of this, and I wanted to give him the opportunity to provide some invited testimony.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, council members. As you know, Travel Portland is the destination marketing management organization for Portland, and we bring those wonderful visitors and their dollars to town to spend in our city. I want to start with my testimony with a reminder that the lodging and rental car businesses came forward in 2001 to fund the expansion of the Oregon Convention Center after the citizens of Portland rejected a tax measure to fund that. In their wisdom, those rental car and lodging members knew that their expanding the center would create great economic impact, not only for their businesses, but also for businesses large and small throughout the region. In that initial agreement, other visitors' facilities needs were addressed, as well as a supportive system of investments of infrastructure and marketing for Portland as a destination. These investments began the visitors' facilities intergovernmental agreement, and I like to always emphasize that they are visitors' facilities agreements, was where we started. Amendments were made in 2013 that further strengthened the industry's investments in Portland's success, which included the ability to build the Hyatt Regency at the Oregon Convention Center, as it is officially known. We've been seeing a significant increase in convention bookings for the future since we've been able to sell that. Last year, we saw increased future room nights of over 62,000 room nights, 47% increase from the year before. So very successful. That means more jobs, more taxes generated, and more money spent in local businesses. And you've heard from Susan on the summary points of the agreement, and we're very excited to see those strategic investments in Portland's cultural and visitor venues. When I first moved to Portland 25 years ago, a long time, I was a member of the P5 Advisory Committee, participated on Mayor Adams' visioning of Veterans Memorial Coliseum, and as the Merck General Manager, saw the inner workings of P5, OCC, and the Expo. I have a passion for these venues and what they do for our community. These investments are for Portlanders first, and they are the most important customers of those venues. They help make Portland a great place to live. The agreement before you today shows once again how the lodging and rental car partners have stepped up to the plate with Mayor Wheeler and other government partners. I want to share our public support for the livability and safety supportive services investment. And I want to be clear, Mayor Wheeler, Metro Council President Tom Hughes, Chair Kafoury, with the industry's participation, we're all champions of additive investments in livability and safety support services. Credit should be roundly shared. And while we are very supportive, we also expect accountability and measurements of success. One of the 10 points of our recently completed tourism master plan was for us to be actively engaged in making a difference in vulnerable communities. The county must use those additive funds to make a visible difference for those living in crisis on the streets of Portland. And as you are a partner in the Joint Office of Homeless Services, we will work with you to monitor that success on the industry's behalf. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Council, for your part in getting this agreement over the finish line.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Miller, does anybody have any questions?
Just a question.
Commissioner Fish?
Jeff, I can't resist the opportunity, since you're here, to ask you two questions. The first is, I just got back from La Jolla, and a particularly beautiful part of Southern California, just outside of San Diego. I was struck by the number, by the level of street homelessness that I encountered in the downtown shopping district and the way the community adapted to that. About a year ago, I was in Los Angeles and learned they have 2.5 times the per capita homeless challenge that we face. And of course, recently in Seattle, to watch my daughter run the marathon. And Seattle is a harsher city than our city because of the way the street grid is laid out and the kind of downtown structures. So the homeless situation seems harsher, it's frankly. So you are no doubt hearing from peer cities and from your counterparts in other cities. What are we not doing enough of to address this challenge?
You know, I think this begins to make investments in those supportive services, but I will tell you that it's important that we separate the need to take care of our homeless population and how we address bad street behavior, as we like to call it. They're two very different things. And having support services and services actually on the street, we hope some of these funds will be used to take care of people in crisis on the street today and get them into services as well as supportive housing. So the industry is very interested in being a part of that conversation. And our team has been working with Mark Jolin closely on sort of what is going on. And so we look for ways to partner more closely with him.
The other question I wanted to ask you is, somehow, every once in a while, someone who is thinking of coming to Portland that chooses not to because they've seen something on TV or they've read something, somehow, for some strange reason, those emails end up in our inboxes, and
mine
so we
too.
Get to read them. My recollection is that we're about 16 million tourists coming through the region annually now.
Yes.
And that's a lot of people. And where does that rank in terms of our peer groupings?
You know, and we're very similar to the same size cities. We have the fortunate advantage of having a lot of direct service international flights. So the mix of our tourists are generally better than, say, in Austin, Texas, or cities without the kind of air service we have.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your being here. And speaking of special guests, I know we do have Mark Jolin here from the Joint Office. He doesn't have a presentation today, but if anybody had any questions specific to the Joint Office, he wanted to make himself available for that purpose. You're off the hook today, Mark. Congratulations. Public testimony on this item, Carla.
No one signed up.
Very good. Anything further? This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance.
Just before you go out, then. I know, because our guests won't be here next week, I just want to thank everybody, the team who's been negotiating Travel Portland Joint Office. This has not been at all easy, even though, as Jeff said, we all agree on the goals, and we're all very blessed by the tourism industry and the funds that it brings in. So I need to mark my thanks to everybody and to note that I'm particularly happy about the allocation of money for Veterans Memorial Coliseum. Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for asking the question about that, because it is doing well. But as I'm going to say in my comments next week, it hosted the Beatles and Queen and Aretha Franklin. And since I'm now doing kind of my reunion, my tour of aging rock bands before they stop touring, I'm going to a lot of really big venues. I just can't imagine seeing those icons in a really intimate situation like Veterans Memorial Coliseum. And thank you to the veterans who insisted that we rename it and that we will keep it. So I just thank you, everybody.
Mayor, when does this come back next week?
Does this come back to a time certain? I don't believe so.
No, it'll just be on the regular agenda.
So that what that means is we're likely to have some people in the chambers who are here for some other item, and we'll take it up. So if I could, Mayor, I think Jeff said something very important when he complimented the three jurisdictional leaders for bringing about this deal. And we've just come off of a Metro housing bond, which showed a unique and high level of collaboration among jurisdictional partners. And it would not have happened. It would not have been successful without that. And Mayor, I want to thank you for your leadership on this. Obviously, great staff work in working out the details, and there still may be some wordsmithing given if passed as prologue here. But this is a great opportunity for our city, and it's a prudent way of tapping some excess revenues that we have. And it has the potential to do a lot of good. And I think from my point of view, as much as I like the investments in VMC and the Schnitz and potentially in Keller, it's having a predictable source of funding for services on the permanent supportive housing side, and also addressing livability concerns, which we share with many of our Travel Portland friends in terms of getting services to people who would genuinely need them and are deserving of our support. So I want to thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner.
I'd like to just also thank you, Mayor, for your leadership on this, and Jeff Miller and Tom Hughes and Chair Crafori. Had the pleasure of serving on the VDF board for a while and on the Travel Portland board as well, and really enjoyed that. It's just really very interesting to learn about the travel and tourism industry in Portland and to watch its fantastic growth over the last 10 years or so. It's just amazing. But I will have to say that every time I think of the VDF agreement, I'll always think of Sam Adams. I think he probably started this as the mayor, Katz's chief of staff, started these discussions.
That's Sam Adams right now.
Yeah, excuse really.
He's like, don't bring me into this.
Excuse me, Dan Saltzman's office. The commissioner is tied up right now. Chair Crafori, he'll get right back to you. Okay.
I'll always think of Sam because to me, it was such a Byzantine agreement with buckets. You don't refer to them as buckets anymore. I think you call them allocations now. But yeah,
they still call them buckets.
Do you still call them buckets? Okay. Anyway, I'll always think of Sam Adams, both as chief of staff to Vera Katz and also as mayor in his own right, when I think of this agreement, because it was suitably complicated that only somebody like Sam could make all these parts move together. But it is a great agreement, and I'm really pleased also to see that the support for housing and homelessness. This is, it's really time for the Visitor Development Fund to do this. And so thanks to all your members, Jeff, for, stepping up on this as well.
Very good.
Mayor.
Well, Commissioner Udaly.
This is what I get for waiting to be recognized. First of all, well, I won't be here next week, so I appreciate the opportunity to make some comments on record. If I've learned anything about spectator venues, It's that everything related to it is incredibly lengthy and complex, and Susan, I'm so glad I don't have your job. This agreement is 36 pages long. It has 4 pages of definitions. I've memorized all of them. I just want to say that tourism is obviously a huge and vital driver of our local economy, but it is also a driver for displacement. Really now more than ever that we have hundreds, if not thousands, of homes and units taken out of our rental inventory and put into the short-term rental market. And we hear complaints and concerns from constituents and out-of-towners about the impact our homeless crisis has on tourism and our local economy. There's a direct and undeniable correlation between affordability and homelessness. So this is really a vicious cycle. My hope is that we are at the beginning of a virtuous cycle by investing this money in supporting the people who are the least likely to be able to get themselves housed in this market. They may have previously. We had SROs. People may have lived with friends and family who themselves are now facing displacement and unaffordability. And they are the least likely to succeed without support. So I just want to thank everyone involved, the mayor, Commissioner Fish and his staff, Tom and Susan, Travel Portland, the Joint Office, Multnomah County, and Metro. It's really exciting to see this investment, and I'm looking forward to what we're going to do with it.
Excellent. Well, in the spirit of thanks, and I'll give a longer speech next week.
Did I leave some out?
But I really appreciate Jeff being here and representing Travel Portland and underscoring the fact that this would not happen without the private sector's involvement and agreement to actually use part of this funding to address an issue which really is important to the travel and tourism industry, just as Commissioner Udaly has said. But I want to say my final thanks for what might almost have escaped this conversation as something of an errata, but it's really important, and that is Commissioner Fritz has been our dutiful representative on the VDF board. And I may not have this quite right, but since no one's going to correct me, I'm just going to go for it and say I believe she never misses a meeting. She is a regular presence on behalf. Look at that, thumbs up all around. So I want to thank you for being the representative of the city council on the board and being diligent and getting information back to us and to our team who need all this information. You don't get thanked very often for that, but today you should.
Well, thank you. And I think it's one of the only assignment that I could think of that I've had for the whole 10 years I've been here. And it's also the only morning meeting that I agreed to go to, so which tells you that it's really worth going to the VDF board meeting. So thank you for acknowledging not so much my participation there because it's really fun, but my getting there for 8 o'clock.
Very good. So without any further ado, this is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thanks, everybody. Next.